I have to start first by saying Hannah Daniel, thank you. She's my friend. She brought me a cup of coffee from City Brew. It's pretty sweet of her. You know, Mr. Wilson, you asked if I was okay waiting for a minute while you're getting the folks out of here, and I remembered I had forgot to do something, and that was ask for Steve Doty to be my timer to let me know when I was running out of time. So, Steve, would you take care of that for me? If you need to set it to the calendar app, I have to work tomorrow morning at 7:30. So you just let me know in enough time to get that, about 10 hours is what I need. All right, man, I appreciate it. Wow, what a great camp, man. And I know it seems to be the rhetoric every year. So Jay, how much for the tent with the airplane-proof soundproofing on that one? No such thing. Okay. Man, every year, what do you hear? Great messages. And I can tell you this, great messages are great only if they change you. A long time ago, I went to a training seminar, and the guy made this statement. You got to follow me through because you can get lost in it. He said, training that does not bring about change is as effective as a parachute that opens on the first bounce. Don't just praise the messages and hit the parking lot and be like, good weekend, back to life, back to reality. Let these things have impact in your life and change, man. We've been working on some great themes. And I love the Old Testament because if you want to understand the things of the New Testament, we get to see the illustrations of them in the physical sense in the Old Testament to see what these things look like. I appreciate the pictures or the portraits from the prophets. I need to do a couple of housekeeping details. I need you guys' help. We were scheduled for breakfast this morning to do the cleanup. We have quite a drive to get home and a time change on top of it. And the Great Falls crew switched with us. So they swapped yesterday morning for this morning. So would you please give the Great Falls crew a hand for switching for us? By that simple change, you literally bought us at least an hour and a half. So thank you. Really appreciate that. Second thing is this shirt right here. And I'm going to do this quick as I can. At Badlands Family Camp, our camper was down there the week before, and so I was taking my clothes out of my pickup into the camper. And my brother-in-law, Jared Adam, rolls up and as I'm hauling a shirt in. And this particular shirt was one I really liked. And I bought it independent of my wife. And my wife did not like that one quite as much as I did. But I would tell you that it received resounding approval. She just doesn't like paisleys. It had some paisleys on it. So anyway, I wear this shirt to preach in. And Jared talks about how he was going to bring a shirt to preach in. But his wife talked him out of it. So I offer Jared my shirt to preach in. I had a clean one, but he chose the one that I already preached in. And then he got up front, and he talked about it's pretty good brother-in-law that gives you a dirty shirt to wear. And then he said that there was a compliment somewhere in there. So I'm still looking for it. So he bought this shirt yesterday and wanted me to wear it. Now I'm going to tell you, I don't know what's worth, Jared, a dirty shirt or one that's never been washed. So... You know, as far as brother-in-laws go, I hit the jackpot. Love you, Jared. He's my buddy, my traveling partner. We were talking the other day, and probably with the exception of my wife, I've got more miles in the vehicle with him than anybody else. So, appreciate you, even though you gave me an unclean shirt. There's a compliment in there somewhere. One other quick thing. Caleb Wilson did an awesome devotion this morning. And one of the things that he was working on was not making provision for the flesh. Now, it's Monday morning at family camp. And I get there's some things going on and maybe some tired. But there's a whole lot more people in this tent right now than there was this morning for devotion. And I can tell you, that Caleb did not prepare any less hard than anybody else did. And same with Jason Yates and Kirk Heinbaugh when they got up and did their devotions in the morning. I'm not putting you under the law. You do what you want to do. But I can tell you this, when you start making provision for the flesh, it starts with a little thing and it ends up in a big thing. And if you want to hear that illustrated, go back and listen to what Caleb said if you weren't here. But I'm also going to tell you this, that we have become slaves to the God of convenience. We have fallen down and worshipped at the God of convenience, because I can tell you this right now, there can be a thought in the head, it's a little tough for me to do something, so I'll just go back and listen to it online. You know who got on the ark? Those that showed up at the door. And those that showed up after the door was shut, died. I'm just telling you, there was a great message this morning about making no provision for the flesh. And sometimes, think about what you choose instead of the good stuff. Because I can tell you, that message will be great to listen to it online, but you don't get to see Caleb as he's talking and the inflection and the emotion and the things that he puts into it. You miss that element of that. And even when you watch it on that two-dimensional screen, you don't see it the same. And you don't get to be in the presence of the body of the saints the same way. So I'm going to encourage us as we go forward, make no provision for the flesh. Even if there's another option that we can just go listen to it online. Guys, you got to go. I understand those things. I'm talking about maybe we chose to stay in bed instead of get up. You guys think a young man like Caleb Wilson deserves some support from us by our attendants? Go visit with him sometime. That guy's a worker for the Lord. And you know what? He's a young man that's getting his way in it. You can strongly impact him, and a lot of times you can do that just by your presence. So let's be present for the Lord. Okay, you can go ahead and turn to Psalms chapter 24. We're going to get there in a minute. Did I mention Hannah Daniel? Thank you. The Bible. I want you to think about this morning in this light. Ever think about how the Bible starts? God makes it, and got right away, we enter into a principle called marriage. Right away, right off the bat. And I was thinking to myself, it's Monday morning, family camp. I got to make sure that I reel you guys in, because right now, my job is to help to engage you, and unfortunately, I'm going to have to push some of the other information in your brain out for a little bit to make room for what I'm getting ready to talk about. Davis, I'll try and leave you a little space there too. But I knew that this morning, I'm going to have to bring some energy and engage you a little bit in this. So I want you to think about this in the form of a story. We have a great king. This great king is the greatest king ever. In fact, he is a king beyond all belief. Because not only is a king, he's a ruler, he's a creator. And this king has a son. And I would tell you this, that one of the worries of kings that have sons is no different for the worries of a man that has a son. Who's he going to marry? That's a concern of the king. Who's my son going to marry? Enter Prince Valiant. I purposely choose not to use Prince Charming, because what's charm? Deceitful, right? Is Jesus deceitful? Actually, I think 1 Peter 2 makes that very clear, doesn't it? It said that there was no deceit found in his mouth. He's not Prince Charming, he's Prince Valiant. He's good to the very core. And every pot has a lid, so he's going to need a wife that matches that same character. Because that's how this thing works. I can tell you this, man, I've observed some things in my life, and honestly, there's some people got married sometimes, I'm like, man, they seem mismatched. And then a few things reveal, you're like, understand now, because every pot's got a lid. Oh, the husband and wife go together. So if the husband is Prince Valiant, should the wife only be beautiful? Because beauty is vain, right? She is to be pure, holy, and blameless, just like the Prince. What a great way to begin this. And then what do we got? We got the servant of the Most High God, a covering cherub that's close to Him, that is not content with his position in the kingdom and wants the glory for himself. And something interesting happens. And we're in the realm of tales here, right? And what does every good story have in it? The bad guy, right? How about this? Try this on for size. The dragon. Man, you don't think that literature steals from the Bible? The dragon! You know, that invokes hearts or fear in the hearts of the children and the farmer. And what do we see? The story goes on. The message of the Bible continues. And really what happens from then on is just like a good story where we have the war, the battle, as the prince goes to conquest his bride. The pure and holy and blameless bride. This is a cool story, though, because guess what? The bride also gets to engage that dragon as well. This is the story of the Bible. They get to work and overcome that adversary, that evil one, together, the dragon. And you know how they're going to do it? By their perfect character. Holy, righteous, blameless glory. And they're going to go through all of these things so they can get to their wedding day. Because that's how stories end. You ever notice what's at the end of the Bible? Wedding day. Right? That's Revelation, isn't it? There's the climax of the battle where this thing comes to the apex. The dragon is slain. And what happens? Prince Valiant takes his bride, and they get married. And you know what happens after that? Come on, you guys. What happens at the end of every story? They live happily ever after. What a great picture that we have in the Bible. There's sometimes that we can get so caught up in the details, we can miss an overall theme. And the theme is this. There is a king who is holy and righteous and just. And he is deserving of a bride that matches his character. And he is so interested and so willing that he is going to spend the time to work with her to develop that character so that they can be together for eternity, because pots and lids go together. And if they don't fit, they ain't going to make it. That's the story of the Bible, quickly summed up with a certain viewpoint on it from the picture of a marriage. From the beginning. They all live happily ever after. My topic is powerful pictures or portraits from the prophets regarding the glory of the Lord. I'm going to submit to you this morning that what the story I just told you is about the glory of the Lord. Prince Valiant and his bride. I would tell you this, you take a look, we don't have to dig too deeply into that. And we can understand that a man's wife can be his glory. There are very good things that come from it. Now, the Proverbs 31 woman, right? Which is the church. She's praised by who? Her husband. She brings glory to her husband. Picture of the Bible. Psalm chapter 24, one of my assigned texts here. Mr. Wilson, I was really excited about this. I was. Man, I was like, whoo boy, I get to do this. And I'll tell you this, man, I've always wanted to be the guy that got up here and preaches first so nobody gets on your messages a little bit. I decided about 10 minutes in the camp that people were going to get on the message, but I was going to preach it anyway. So I get to kind of sum some things up. And I checked with Davis first to make sure I wasn't going to step on him too hard. I told him I might just make sure that he's there by feeling around. But other than that, I'm thankful to have this time to do this because I get to bring an overall perspective to some things that really we've been working on. And I really appreciate that opportunity. I was excited. Still am. Verse 7. Lift up your heads, O gates. Be lifted up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. The Lord, who is the King of glory? The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O gates, and lift them up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord of hosts. He is the King of glory. There's so much right here we can talk about. Guys, I would say that we're going to be at 30,000 feet. I think we're going to be more like 60,000 feet today. There's so many things to talk about this. So understand that please do your own work and fill in a whole bunch of the information that goes along with this. Who is the King of glory? The Lord who is strong and mighty in battle. The King of glory. You know, we have an inappropriate picture of what valiant warriors look like. Follow me through. Most of the warriors that are valiant are actually pretty despicable human beings. A lot of them are. The Lord, who is strong and mighty in battle, do you know that He's humble? Not arrogant? Do you know that most warriors in the worldly sense, what do they possess? An arrogance. See, the Lord knows what He's fighting for. And humility is one of His main character traits. He's not arrogant as He does that. I could go into a whole bunch of stuff. I don't have time to do that. Let's take a look at a picture of the Lord of glory from the Old Testament. Let's go to Daniel chapter 10. We've been, on Wednesday night, Brother Steve Eisnagel has been taking us through the Old Testament on a journey. And journey's probably fair, Steve, wouldn't you say? I mean, I think we were trying to think about the other night how long it's been. Year and a half at least. Yeah, pretty good amount of time. And we're working on some things in Daniel. And I told him, I said, man, Steve, I appreciate it. I was going through some of these things, but man, you reinforced some things in my own mind as we're doing this. Daniel chapter 10, verse 5. I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, there was a certain man dressed in linen, whose waist was girded with a belt of pure gold of Uphaz. His body also was like beryl. His face had the appearance of lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches. His arms and feet like the gleam of polished bronze. And the sound of his words like the sound of a tumult. This is an intense dude, man. You think you're going to be able to ignore this guy when he's standing in front of you? Man, this is the light in the darkness. Man, the one challenge that we've had this year is the amount of smoke in the sky. It just makes it hard. I mean, I do look forward to being at Montana Family Camp and, you know, the Badlands Family Camp, places like that where you can actually see stars. And this year we can't. But I really like those real dark nights where the moon's not present because you can see how bright some of those lights are. Now, I want you to think, and I want you to picture a completely black sky with just the stars in it. No moon, no clouds, and then a flash of lightning. It says his face was like lightning. What happens if lightning happens anywhere in your peripheral vision in a dark night like that? Where does your attention immediately go? You couldn't help it. You're going to turn towards that light. This is a picture of Jesus here, dressed in linen. By the way, guys, you know, words have meanings, and the words are there for a reason. Check out linen sometime. Work your way through it. That linen has to do with righteousness and purity and brightness. So when it talks about linen here, that's the same thing if you read somewhere where it talks about someone being white linens. Same linen. Same process to manufacture that linen. The same communication is present in that. So we got a picture of what? Being holy and face like lightning. There's some of you I know that went to the book of Revelation. We might get there if we have time. Steve Doty's my timer. We got time. Matthew chapter 17. I want to introduce a few other things there. the Mount of Transfiguration. You know, I've seen the Mount of Transfiguration skipped over a lot in my years. There's some people that don't know what to do with that thing. Let's just apply some logic and reason and work our way through this a little bit. Matthew 17, we're not going to hit all this. Verse 2, he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his garments became as white as light. Let me introduce a concept to you here and something for you to think about. When you see the face is a reflection of the inner man. That's who it is, the inner man. When you see the garments, that's a picture of the deeds that are done in the flesh, the outer man. And what do we have here? We have a harmony that goes with it. We have a face that is bright like the sun, shone, and we have garments that are also pure white. Mark's account talks about this, and he mentions it that his garments are so white like no launderer on earth can get them. See, when you talk about light and you talk about the glory of the Lord, you're talking about the goodness, the good character of God in which there is no darkness at all. It is pure white. And do you know what pure white appears as? The shining glory that we see. That quite honestly, those in the darkness will be attracted and looking towards the light. Do you understand that even the enemies of God recognize the light? They recognize it. They see it because it stands out. Can't miss it. The King of Glory. Pure. Inner man and all the deeds that he has done. Does that match up with the Scripture? Him who knew no sin became sin on our behalf that we might become the righteousness of God. That matches up with what we see. The glory of Christ. Let's go to Exodus chapter 33. People play different roles in their life. And I'm going to put a couple categories out there for you. There's an innovator, and there's an implementer. So the innovator is the one that dreams stuff up. The implementer is the one that puts the dreams into action. Now I'm going to tell you where I fall in those two categories. I don't have a lot of my own original material. I am not an innovator. I'm not. That is not who I am. If you want me to sit down and dream something up, the very best I'm going to be able to do is reorganize some things that I already have. That's it. If we were stuck in the horse and buggy day and it was up to me to figure out how to get to the automobile, you'd probably have some efficient horse and buggies. But you wouldn't have an automobile because that's not how my brain works. I don't innovate. So that being said, I like to understand how things work. Because if I'm going to put something in practice, I need to understand some nuts and bolts on how that thing works. I can tell you this. Leonardo da Vinci dreamed up a helicopter, whatever it was, not me. I would never have dreamed up a helicopter, ever. Ever. Under no circumstance. Because I understand gravity fairly well by experience. I would never have dreamed that thing. I'm thankful for those guys, but that's not who I am. So I wanted to understand, when we talked about glory of the Lord, I can tell you, if you don't work on some of the things behind it, it can be nebulous. It can be difficult to understand or associate or draw to. And I need to give credit. Remember a moment ago when I said that I don't have a lot of original material? This is part of it. I borrowed this from an Inner Man Radio podcast that helped put the key in the lock for me. And it wasn't that long ago. And I'm getting longer in the tooth, so there's still hope, even if you're getting older and you don't understand some things yet. Stick with it. Okay? Exodus 33. Verse 18, then Moses said, I pray thee, show me thy glory. And he said, I myself will make all my goodness pass before you, and will proclaim the name of the Lord before you. And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and will show compassion in whom I will show compassion. Moses said, show me your glory. What is the Lord's response to that? I will make all of my goodness pass before you. Was he not answering the request of Moses, or was he answering the request of Moses when he said, I will make all my goodness pass before you? Chapter 34, verse 6. Then the Lord passed by in front of him and proclaimed, the Lord God, compassionate and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in loving kindness and truth, who keeps loving kindness for thousands, who forgives iniquity, transgression, and sin. Yet, he will by no means leave the guilty unpunished, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and on the grandchildren to the third and fourth generations. I pause there and I put emphasis for something very specific, because I would tell you that the religious world, by and large, thinks about Jesus being compassionate and forgiving, but they don't think about him being just. The guilty have to be punished. Let me throw something else at you as well. The old man's going to die. He's either going to die in the waters of immersion, or he's going to die in the fires of hell. But the old man will die, because the guilty have to be punished. Life for life. That's the goodness of the Lord. See, it's easy to think of the goodness of the Lord, that He's all loving and forgiving. Man, I hate the portrayals of Jesus where the only thing they show is some daisy sniffer. Was He sniffing daisies when the zeal for the house of the Lord consumed Him and He drove them out? There is goodness and righteousness that goes with it, and justice. That's the character and the glory of God, because the glory of God has no darkness in it at all. See, good is not good just by doing some good things. Good is good because it's pure all the way through. The guilty have to be punished. That's the glory of the Lord. Why do you think we have the picture that we do? Let's go to Revelation. Let's go to 19. Revelation 19. Verse 11. Revelation 19, verse 11. And I saw heaven open, behold, a white horse, and he who sat upon it is called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and wages war. Hey man, what happened to all that forgiveness stuff? You know where we're at here? We're at the time where the time and opportunity for forgiveness is past. The door is shut. Why do you think we have the picture of Noah's Ark? Just so kids can have something to do in Sunday school? You know, a little giraffe sticking his head out the window? That giraffe gets a lot of screen time, man. That's not why we have Noah's Ark. You know what we have Noah's Ark? Number one, to teach you about a lot of things. Do you know that Noah's Ark's all about being brought through the waters of immersion by God? That the only way that you can enter into that immersion, being brought safely through the waters, is by going through the door. John 10 ring in your mind there? And who opens and shuts that door? God. And what happened to Johnny come lately? You're burning him in your car. I think there's a lot more humans on the earth than there were dinosaurs, and I think that's where some of the fossil fuels that you're consuming are coming from. I can't prove it, but I can tell you that we're carbon-based life forms, just like they were. And if there was as many people then as there was today, they had to go somewhere. And population tends to be like population, where they group up together. And when all that stuff cascaded down over heat and pressure, I think they got transformed into raw oil. That's my opinion. You check it out. And if I'm wrong, I don't care about that either. That's my opinion. Scripture doesn't tell me that. I'm just telling you, what happened to them guys? If they showed up 1 second after the door was shut, what happened? They died. By the way, I don't think they showed up a second after. I think they waited until it was pretty clear that doom was on the horizon, and then there was some jailhouse repentance. Where's Nolan? But that's not my topic. The glorified Christ. Man, we could continue on. And Steve Doty is my timekeeper, so I have plenty of time, but I'm going to move on. But I want you to understand, the picture of the glorified Christ is good and righteous and holy and loving and forgiveness and just. And the guilty will be punished. That's the picture here. Man, we got the marriage supper of the Lamb, right? And what do we think about marriages, man? Weddings, man, it's all good, right? Everything's, woo, happy day. What's it associated with here? The marriage supper of the Lamb and justice and judgment go together. Just like on the salvation of the ark. Do you understand that there was salvation and judgment in the same closing of the door? At the exact same moment. The marriage supper of the Lamb coincides with the judgment of the earth. And the guilty will be punished because the King of glory is holy and righteous and just. You know why the Scripture says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of the wisdom? Because you should be afraid. You read through the picture of Jesus as you see Him. He ain't no daisy sniffer. Man, that dude's wielding a sword that there ain't nobody that can thrust and parry to keep up with it. No one. Man, what a powerful picture we have. Now, we started out talking about weddings, and I've had some opportunity to work with some young people over the years and talk to them, and I would tell you, this is a continual phrase that comes out of my mouth. If you want a good catch, you got to be a good catch. Because pots have lids, water seek their level. That's the way it works. If you want a good spouse, you got to be a good spouse beforehand. If you're going to wait to be a good spouse till after you're married, you're probably going to marry at the level that you are, not the level that you think you're going to be at someday. Just, that's it. So let's take a look at our King of Glory. Pretty good catch? What do you think? This guy ran the scope of eternity to get himself a wife and never once missed the mark. That's a pretty good catch. And good catches deserve good catches. So he's got to find a wife that is also a good catch. I'm going to say something now. I'm going to put the cart ahead of the horse just for a second. Do you understand that the reason that you not only have the events that happen in your immersion where the old man is destroyed, but there is the development of the character so that you also can stand holy and righteous and blameless and just as the bride of Christ. Man, we've talked a lot about identity lately. I'm going to tell you, identifying myself as the bride of Christ is a mental, that requires some mental work for me. And I don't mean in the sense of the church, but identifying myself as a female. Right? But if I don't identify myself as the bride of Christ, am I ever going to be the bride of Christ? Because I can tell you this, you will never outperform your picture of yourself, ever. And you will operate in accordance of what your picture of yourself is. And if you continue to operate as the old man, then you will get the results of the old man. It doesn't matter how many family camp messages you listen to. If you leave and you don't change, then you're counting on the first bounce of the parachute to make change. Ain't going to work. Terminal velocity ensures that. Isaiah chapter 62. Verse 1. Another assigned passage. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not keep quiet, until her righteousness goes forth like brightness, and her salvation like a torch that is burning. Do pronouns mean anything? Her? Is this talking about Jesus, or is this talking about the bride of Christ? Verse 2, and the nations will see your righteousness and all kings your glory, and you will be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Lord will designate. Was Jesus ever called by a new name? Or is he talking about the bride of Christ? You will also be a crown of beauty in the hand of the Lord and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. It will no longer be said to you forsaken, nor to your land will it be any longer be said desolate. But you will be called, my delight is in her, and your land married. For the Lord delights in you, and to him your land will be married. For as a young man marries a virgin, so your sons will marry you. And as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so your God will rejoice over you. We started out talking about the King of Glory. Now we're going to talk about his wife, the church. Pretty good descriptive language in here for us, right? Beauty in the hand. My delight is in her. Married. See, this thing doesn't go through if the bride's not worthy. The marriage doesn't happen. Because good catches get good catches. And pots have lids and water seeks its level. Doesn't happen. See, there's a glory of the Lord that's His church. And you actually can't separate those things out no different than when God said in the very beginning, what God has put together, no man shall separate. So does it make sense that the glory of the Lord and the glory of His church are going to be glory together? The church is the glory of the Lord. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Verse 7. For a man ought not to have his head covered, since he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of man. The woman is the glory of man. Verse 8. For man does not originate from woman, but woman from man. For indeed man was not created for a woman's sake, but woman for man's sake. Do we see that from the beginning? Right? God makes this perfectly clear. Where does woman come from? Anybody know what woman means? From man. Where does woman come from? Adam gets put to sleep. One rib, one wife. You know what? Why do you think it was taken out of his side? I don't know, just think. Did anything else ever go into the side that marries together? United in the blood of the Lamb, maybe. Maybe that's there for a reason. Maybe it's just coincidence. I don't think so. What's the picture that's given? Those two are joined together, and woman was created for man. Why was the church created? For Jesus. His bride. He scoured all of eternity to make sure to get the right wife. Seven brides for seven brothers. There's a little scene in there, man. Right at the beginning of that movie. I'm getting old. My examples are old. If you don't understand, sorry. YouTube it, whatever you kids do today. I don't care. That, seven brides for seven brothers, man. He goes to town. Adam Potterby, what's he going to do? Get him a wife, right? How does he start out? Sings a little song because it's a musical. Probably the only musical I like, by the way. At least there's some man stuff in it, you know? throwing axes and, you know, Caleb talk about a little good battle going on, barn raisins. You know, I can get behind that stuff. But Sound of Music running through the fields, it's not for me. Anyway, so he starts singing a song. What's he say? I ain't picking him. Oh, yeah, he sings that part too. I could almost do that one. Don't tempt me, man. what's he say? I ain't picking one out till what? Looked them all over. Because he wanted what? The right wife. And what did he pick one on? Was she pretty? Sure. Man, she was a worker. She had good qualities that he saw. It wasn't just beauty that he saw. You understand that Jesus scanned all of eternity to find his church. Pick the right one. The beautiful one. You understand that? You're the right one. I'm the right one to be the bride of Christ. Man, that's amazing. Isn't it? that of all the people that have ever walked on the face of the earth, and insert your name here, God chose me to be His partner for all of eternity. Man, what an incredible picture of value that comes along with that. Verse 11. However, in the Lord, neither is woman independent of man, nor is man independent of woman. For as the woman originates from the man, so also the man has his birth through the woman, and all things originate from God. Together. Not independent. I can tell you this. There's some times that you may see my wife and I apart physically, but I can tell you that we operate together. You know, we've picked up a lot of things over the years, and we operate together. What, you think that Jesus and His church are supposed to operate together or independent? Jesus isn't some lone wolf warrior out there? The bride's just like, wonder what we can get on Amazon today. No, not the picture that we have. In fact, I would tell you this, when you take a look at the Proverbs 31 woman, which is a picture of the church, she's industrious, working to bring value to her husband. See, that's another piece of advice that I've given some young people, specifically ladies. I made a whole carload of them mad at me one time. They said, what do you think? I said, what do you bring into the table? What do you mean? You're working some dead-end job. Bring some to the table. You want to get married, you're waiting for some guy to come in here. This is a little marriage advice for you young ladies. Bring some to the table. Be working. Be industrious. Don't just wait for some guy to come in and take care of you. Bring some to the table. Does the church bring anything to the table? Sure does. And they do it because they have this picture. When I was a young man, Mr. Wilson accepted his role to propagandize us. The Taming of the Shrew. That's not the one I'm going to talk about. But does the bride need some help sometimes understanding her role? Does Jesus help the bride understand her role sometimes? Sometimes she might get a little big for her britches. God's got to help some things out. Maybe buys into the women's lib movement of the day. Don't need no man. Maybe a little. That's not what I'm talking about. And I don't. This is a long time ago. You got to understand. I'm getting in my way back machine to get here. And Google didn't help me any on this one, guys. Honestly, it didn't. It was actually pretty confusing. As I recall, it was the 7-cow wife. Is that right? Oh, good. He doesn't remember either. This is good. All right. He has no idea where I'm going next. I actually used him and Katie as an example in Ohio, and he's afraid right now, which is good. So, appreciate you guys. It's not that. The 7-cow wife, and if you Google it, you're going to get the 6-cow wife, the 8-cow wife, the 10-cow wife, and it's going to be on an island. It's going to be here, there, and there. Let me give you the basics of the story, and you apply whatever backdrop you need to for this to apply, okay? Basically, there's a king that has a daughter. And quite honestly, she's a little bit on the homely side. She's not the best-looking gal on the island. And as we all know, that when you live in islands, alliances are pretty important. And a lot of times those alliances are formed by marriage. And so in order for this guy to continue to pass on and make sure that his island continues, and this, and you can put whatever you want in there, his island continues, he has to get his daughter married off to the right guy. And where they were, the custom was the dowry that was given was the man would give for his wife cows. And I understand that, please do not process this story through current terminology and things like that, okay? This has to do with livestock and the ability for production and income and things like that. So, cows are the trading material for wives. The Heinbaughs have some daughters, and they're in the cattle business. Maybe something to consider down the road. I don't know. They give me a lot of grief, man. They do. So I got to take opportunities. So anyhow, this guy comes up. And if you had a pretty good-looking daughter, you might get 3 cows. Maybe if she was really exceptional, 4 cows. So this guy comes in and offers 7 cows for the ugly duckling. And the king actually tries to talk him out of it. Like, you're paying a little too much. In fact, being quite honest, I might have given you a cow to take her off my hands. And the young man insists, nope, 7 cows is what I'm going to pay. This is coming back to you now. All right, good. Because I'm relying on you to be a little bit of my memory here, and that's scary too. So as we're going through this, you know, he takes her away to his own island, because we have island alliances here. And a year later, the dad goes to visit his daughter. He's met down at the dock by this very beautiful young lady. Stunningly beautiful. Just attractive in every way. And he pulls up to the dock and he says, I'm here to see my daughter and my son-in-law. And the daughter says, don't you recognize me, Dad? What changed? What changed is she went from a -1 cow to a +7 cow wife. That sounded bad, didn't it? Whoever laughed first, thanks for bringing that to my attention. What did he get? You know what that guy got? He got a 7-cow wife. Now, he could have got her for -1 cow, but you know what she would have been? A -1 cow wife. What did the Lord Jesus give for his bride? What value has been communicated to us if we're paying attention? See, because here's what could have happened. The bride could have said, you're an idiot, I'm not worth 7 cows. Do you understand? That's actually how most people think when it comes to what Jesus did for them, is he's an idiot and I'm not worth it. What's the real picture? Jesus gave everything for you because you're worth it. Because he scanned all of eternity to find his bride. And the cost was worth it. You ever bought something and you're like, this is the best thing I've ever spent my money on? Which, by the way, is totally untrue. We blow stuff out of proportion like crazy. But those words may have escaped your lip. This is the best thing since sliced bread. Like, slicing bread is so hard. But it's the best thing since sliced bread. You know, what's Jesus working on here? What picture is he communicating to us? As that valiant prince, scanned all of eternity to find you and me, to be his bride. What is he communicating? You're his glory. See, don't kid yourself that before Jesus came to earth, he already had heaven. You know what he didn't have? Your bride. His glory. In that sense. Him who knew no sin became sin on our behalf that we might become the righteousness of God. Because pots have lids and water seeks its level. And a good catch deserves a good catch. When he elevated us to that position, that old person ceased to exist, no different than the -1 cow daughter, to the point that she was completely unrecognizable to her physical father. That's the picture we have of the glory of the Lord. 2 Corinthians chapter 3. If you don't know this verse by now, where do we see the picture that's given to us and value communicated to us. It's actually not just in the amount that was paid. It's by seeing the character and knowing that that character, that goodness, that glory is going to have for a bride someone of the same character, the same picture, the same glory. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18, "But we all, with unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed in the same image from glory to glory, just as from the Lord the Spirit." Think about the transformation of the seven-cow wife. She went from the ugly duckling to someone who had never ever been paid for a wife than for her. She looked at it and she saw the value from her husband that she had. We look into the face of our husband and you know what we see? The value that we have. And we see the goodness and the character and the righteousness and the justice, the glory of the Lord. And we know that we are the same value as him because he would not get a wife that was less valuable than him. You don't trade down. What an amazing picture that we have. Revelation chapter 19. When we look into the face of the Lord, we see the glory of the Lord, the goodness, the righteousness, the compassion, the loving kindness. And we get transformed into that same thing. Because I would tell you that the husband and wife that work together, they go together. Transform, change from the inside out. Let's see the result. Revelation 19, verse 7. "Let us rejoice and be glad and give the glory to Him, for the marriage of the Lamb has come and His bride has made herself ready. It was given to her to clothe herself in fine linen, bright and clean, for the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints." Listen to how that goes. It says that she made herself ready. And what was given to her was righteousness. What was given to her was the glory of the Lord. But in order for that to take place, she had to make herself ready. She had to put it on. She had to see herself as that beautiful bride. I'm going to tell a little story on my wife here. Steve, am I still in today? All right. Praise the Lord. All right. I'm going to tell a quick story on my wife here. She doesn't know I'm going to do this. She got hurt, injured her knee, and she had to have a little surgery from that. And I would tell you that general anesthesia and my wife are not best friends. In fact, they invoke a lot of emotions from her. I know this, and we live in this weird time, right, where you have limited ability to be able to be with people because of a virus. Like, we live together all the time, but I can't. Anyway, so she's recovering from surgery, and I know this about my wife, that she tends to be emotional, which may come as no surprise to some of you that know her, that emotions lie close to the surface with her, and anesthesia completely removes the barrier between the surface and those emotions. And so she comes out of general anesthesia, and pretty soon they come down the hall. And I'm like, "How's she doing?" They're like, "Oh, she's pretty good." I'm like, "She crying?" "Yep." She just wants you. Okay, so now I'm allowed back, properly protective equipment on, to be with my wife that I have lived with for a long time. And so I go in the room there, and she's displaying some emotion. And my wife, if you guys know her, like, I'm telling you, who she is and who she is. So I get in there, and this is what she says. "Mike's here. It's fine. It's fine. Mike's here. It's fine." I won't go into all the details, but she did mention the number of years we have been married in single digits. What I mean is, instead of 22 years, she said that we've been married for 22 years, and repeated that many times. But 22 years ago, we got married. And you know what she did before we got married? She made herself ready.
She put on her wedding dress. She put on her makeup, did her hair. She made herself ready. Now, if she had showed up to our wedding in a pair of ratty old jeans and T-shirt, how do you think I would feel about that? Would I feel that that was really a good way for things to go? I mean, number one, I'd be like, you didn't tell me it was casual. Because I'm in for casual. But I'd have felt pretty bad if I was all dressed up and she wasn't. See, she made herself ready. Because that's what brides do for their wedding day, is they make themselves ready. See, she put on the fine linens. The church does for her wedding day. They're given to her, but she's got to put them on and dress herself and clothe herself in those things. This is a picture of what's given for us here in Revelation 19. Because the glory of the Lord is also His bride, the church. And some ratty old hag does not describe the glory of the bride. This picture that's given to us from the Old Testament. Habakkuk chapter 2. Any of you guys know the Old Testament song, the books of the Old Testament? Do you know that I still use that to navigate the minor prophets? I start in Daniel and I work up to them. And if I've gone too far, then I start over. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 14. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the water covers the sea. That's my final point here. The glory of the Lord. It's easy to think about that just being Jesus. Because that doesn't require anything from me. But I submit to you that the glory of the Lord includes His bride, His church, in all her glory. In all her glory that she gives to her husband. That's the picture of this. Because I can tell you, it was said earlier, that a king without a kingdom is no good. And a husband without a bride is no good. It's incomplete. But the husband with the bride, that's complete. Because we know that from the very beginning of the Bible, don't we? God creates everything. Man, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good. He comes to man, and what's He say? It's no good. Not that man wasn't good. It wasn't good that man was what? Alone. You guys ever read your Bible and hear about first Adam and second Adam? You think that God's plan is to be alone? Or do you think it's to be together? With those that love Him. Those that were willing to lay aside self and put on His character, because pots have lids, water seeks its level, and good catches deserve good catches. What do you think? See, the earth recognizes the glory of the Lord. And do you understand something? You know why persecution comes? Not from dirty, rotten, filthy Christians, but from righteous, holy Christians. If you look just like the Gentiles, they don't care. But when we behave as the glorified bride of Christ, guess what? Those in the world can't handle that righteousness and they want to stomp it out. That's the picture. By the way, read to the end of the book, because the dragon does get slayed, and those that are held captive to do His will, they also get slayed. And there is a great victory. When the camp of the saints gets surrounded, it's not like He's like, well, we tried. No, there's an incredible victory like never been seen before. And He rescues His bride and they live happily ever after. But until that happens, the glory of the Lord in His church has to be evident on the face of the earth to fulfill the prophecy. And it's not done by the bride's power by herself, because the minus one cow wife was still a minus one cow wife until the husband showed her value and who she really was. The powerful portraits from the prophets, the glory of the Lord. Let's close in Matthew chapter 5. Technically, still the Old Testament. Steve, I think I'm going to leave a little time so I'll be able to take some more next year if I need it. All right, man. Good. You're a faithful timekeeper, brother. I appreciate it. Matthew 5, verse 14 says, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do men light a lamp and put it under the peck measure, but on the lampstand it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." Man, does it appear like Jesus is the only light to the world? Or we're light to the world? People see the husband through the bride. I can tell you this, you spent enough time with my wife, you'd have a pretty good idea who I am. You would. Even if you didn't spend much time with me. You'd have a pretty good idea. We're to be lights to the world. The glory of the Lord is to shine through us into the world. Not to be hidden. Not to be veiled by the flesh. The light of the world through us. In 1 John 4:17, he makes a statement talking about Jesus and then us. He says, "As He is, so also are we in this world." Was Jesus the light of the world? Did the glory of the Lord shine forth through the King of glory on the face of the earth? How about His bride? Does the same glory of the Lord shine forth through us to the world around to illuminate the darkness? It was read yesterday at the immersion, right? Expose those unfruitful deeds of darkness. It's part of the righteous, part of walking in the light. And good news is that light trumps darkness. The dragon doesn't win. And we get to live happily ever after.